This is The Green on Delaware Public Media, and I'm Tom Byrne. We continue our look at the fallout from Tuesday's general election here in Delaware with a closer look at how the results will impact the political landscape, especially in the General Assembly. There will be a new governor in Matt Meyer, along with a new Democratic House Speaker and a new Republican House Minority Leader. But Democrats failed to pick up the two seats they needed to grab a House supermajority to go with the one they have in the state Senate. To examine what all this means and what we might expect when lawmakers reconvene in January, Delaware Public Media political reporter Sarah Petrovich joined me earlier this week to discuss where things stand. So let's start with governor. As expected, Democrat Matt Meyer defeated Republican Mike Ramone. His 56-44% margin, similar to the margins that John Carney won by in the previous two gubernatorial races, suggesting perhaps that Meyer's bruising primary with Lieutenant Governor Bethany Hallong did not really hurt him very much with voters. The question now is, what is his relationship going to be with legislators as the new governor? Want to play a couple of clips for you from his acceptance speech on Tuesday night and get your reaction to these.
As your governor, we can and will do so much more. We can all agree that for far too long there was a Delaware way that served insiders and ignored the talents and potential of so many who've been left behind.
And here's another one.
There are a lot of well-heeled people and insiders who can take care of themselves and typically do. The people we need to be concerned about are the rest of us. Delawareans across this state in all three counties, in the cities, the suburbs, and the rural areas.
So what do you make of that, Sarah? Is there a suggestion there that Meyer is looking to really kind of shake things up?
Yeah, Meyer definitely seems like a more progressive candidate than Governor Carney and has campaigned largely on fixing Delaware's education system. You know, it's got an outdated funding formula, continues to produce low proficiency rates statewide. And he has been a proponent of trying to break up this so-called Delaware way, you know, this kind of network of insiders, and has definitely called himself and considers himself an outsider to that system. So during the primary, he seemed to have initial support only from progressive members of the legislature. But following the election, we now have a few more progressive legislators in the House and an opportunity for more in the Senate with some upcoming special elections. So I think Meyer is definitely going to try and capitalize on that new makeup of the legislature. And as you and I both know, as he has said in interviews with us, he has something called, quote, Meyer time, which alludes to the idea that he wants to get policy done and get it done quickly. So, you know, Governor Carney also seemed to have a largely reactive tenure, meaning he definitely had some policies that he championed, but he took sort of a backseat to when it came to what legislation Democrats wanted to push in the General Assembly. And I think Meyer has indicated that he would like a more reactive role in that process, and he's especially going to need to do that if he wants to change the education system and some of those other progressive policy points.
So how likely is an aggressive Meyer going to play well with lawmakers? You mentioned kind of there is a little bit of a change. There's maybe some more progressive lawmakers now that might be more open to that. But going back in time, when Jack Markell was in the similar position, surprisingly won a primary, then became governor, there was tension for a Markell who was more proactive like Meyer may be than reactive like Carney. And that it took a little while for them to kind of gain footing. How do you see this maybe kind of playing out? I mean, it certainly feels like with the backing that many legislators had for Paul Long in the primary, this could be something worth watching, at least in the first months, as everybody kind of gets their feet on the ground.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right that it'll be interesting to follow the relationship with Meyer and lawmakers. And it's definitely true that the majority of Democratic lawmakers who did formally endorse a candidate endorsed Hallong. Mm-hmm. But I will say that as more information came to light about Hallong's campaign finances, I think more legislators felt comfortable distancing themselves from her campaign, although I still see plenty of professional respect for her and what she's done for the state. I will also give credit to Meyer that he did make a real effort to gain some key endorsements, especially those that initially backed Hallong, like the Laborers International Union of North America and the state's largest union, the Delaware State Education Association. Mm-hmm. And he's also very quickly publicly merged his campaign message to advocate for an administration with the now Lieutenant Governor-elect Kyle Evans-Gay. So all of that is to say, yes, I think Meyer is a strong-headed leader, but he has clearly indicated some desire for compromise. And again, I think the more progressive legislature will be helpful for him. But if the current Democratic leadership team largely stays the same, there could be more pushback because that's a strong-willed team as well.
You mentioned the incoming Lieutenant Governor Kyle Evans-Gay. Is this where she could play a role, that you know she's been in the state Senate? Maybe she's the bridge between a Meyer administration and the General Assembly.
Yeah, Kyle Evans Gay, you know, definitely also has progressive policy points. She's been a champion for early childhood education and women's reproductive rights in Delaware. So I think their platforms seem to mesh well. And she does have an edge as someone who served in the state senate for 4 years. So I think 100% it would benefit Meyer to lean on her to understand the politics of the legislature. She will also now preside over the Senate, so she gets a more active role in the General Assembly as a member of the executive branch. So the lieutenant governor's position is kind of whatever the holder wants it to be. So, you know, only time will tell, I think, what Evans Gay makes of that role and if she can bridge that gap between Meyer and the legislature. But I think it would definitely be beneficial for him to lean on her, and especially with that experience that she has.
And as you noted, he kind of was making it clear that he wanted to do that. Even in his acceptance speech, he even said pretty forcefully, like, my lieutenant governor, Kyle Evans Gay. So I think he was trying to kind of be like, yes, we are a team, and we're going to work together, and maybe that's helpful.
Absolutely. I mean, even right after the primary election, there was a form the next day, and he was immediately calling her, you know, my lieutenant governor, and we're going to do this together. So he definitely made that transition quickly and kind of has that willpower, I think, to bridge that gap.
So the other big story on election night was the Democrats' efforts to secure a supermajority in the House of Representatives. Can you walk us through how that played out and what that might mean for what's happening going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. It was pretty interesting. There was a couple of races we were looking at. There were definitely four key races where we, you know, thought the Democrats could gain at least a two-thirds majority, which would be a supermajority. And two-thirds is needed in order to pass the first leg of constitutional amendments, which is essentially the first version of a constitutional amendment. But they would have needed to keep that supermajority to pass a second leg following the 2026 election. So, you know, they wouldn't have completely unyielding power, but it would have been a start to get some things passed, like constitutionalizing abortion rights, constitutionalizing some of those voting rights we've seen, like mail-in voting, permanent absentee, and early voting. Although Republicans have largely shown support for early voting, but not as much on the other two. Democrats did gain a 3/5 majority in the House, though, which is needed to enact increases in taxes and licensing fees, so they wouldn't need Republican support to pass legislation like that. And they can also override a governor veto without Republican support, although we don't necessarily see that being a problem, but you never know. We've seen it in the past. So, but yeah, so those key races, I mean, Mike Smith, he's a Republican. He kept his Newark seat with 55% of the vote. Brian Shoup kept his Milford seat with 63% of the vote. And then Kevin Hensley kept his seat with 53% of the vote. So the only seat that Democrats gained was Mike Ramone's open seat in Pike Creek South, which Working Families Party endorsed candidate Frank Burns won with 58% of the vote.
And Burns had been so close previously to knocking off Ramone. It seemed like he finally got his opportunity with Ramone out. We also looked at a couple of other races that we thought might perhaps be in play, and it turned out really none of them. You know, Monica Beer was not able to make any inroads. Terrell Williams did better in his second run against Hensley, but it seemed like, you know, for all intents and purposes, it was kind of a very static election, except for that one race that did give them kind of, I called it the other night, a kind of a mini supermajority, right? That they could do some stuff without the GOP, but they don't have that full supermajority power. Before next session begins, lawmakers have some other things to work out before we start talking about what legislation is going to be passed or not. And that starts with leadership. And obviously, we know in the House there's two leadership positions, one GOP, one Democratic, that are open. What needs to get done here, and how might that shape what happens going forward?
Yeah, exactly like you said. So both chambers do need to elect new leadership at the beginning of every new General Assembly. All the current Senate leadership that was up for re-election maintain their seats, and that's expected to stay the same, so we probably won't see a shakeup there. But as you said, House leadership, on the other hand, will 100% see a little bit of a shakeup. So in a huge upset, progressive candidate Kamala Smith beat Speaker of the House Valerie Longhurst for her Bear Area seat in the primary, and she's also won her general. And Mike Ramone vacates his seat as a Republican leader of the House following his run in the governor's race. So the natural progression would be that House Majority Leader Melissa Minor Brown is elected Speaker, and then Carrie Evelyn Harris, who is the Majority Whip, becomes a Majority Leader, and then elect a new Majority Whip. And then the same progression on the Republican side would be Lyndon Urich, Minority Leader, would become the
Minority Whip.
Minority Whip, thank you. Would become the Minority Leader, absolutely. And then the Republicans would elect someone new for Minority Whip. So, you know, anything can happen. Those are the natural progressions, but those are all open elections, you know, and multiple legislators can run for those positions.
It could be very interesting, because I know there are some people who had looked at perhaps someone like Brian Shoup, who it seems to, you know, do a good job reaching across the aisle. Could be someone who could be up for a leadership role. And then there was like, oh, but he barely won his primary. And then he wins in a landslide. I mean, is he the type of person who might be on the Republican side, someone who could step into leadership, maybe not as the leader, but as the whip following Lyndon Urich.
Absolutely. I think Shoup is definitely a favorite. And even with some of the voters that I was talking to in the Milford area on the general election, there were several Democrats who said that, you know, they've always supported Shoup. They think he's done a good job. You know, they said that they voted Democrat for the rest of the ticket, but Shoup was the outlier. So he definitely has some great name recognition. And you're right, I've definitely seen him in the legislature working across the aisle. And Mike Smith is another one who retained his seat, and he's also great at working across the aisle and could definitely be someone who's up for that spot.
And certainly on the Democratic side, it'll be interesting to see what, if any, leverage perhaps those progressive legislators from the Working Families Party have in terms of deciding whether they do any change in leadership or perhaps filling that one spot if they do move everybody up one and open up that whip seat.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, that natural progression will be interesting to see if Melissa Minor Brown becomes a speaker. And, you know, we've kind of got what we have there already. But you're right, the whip seat is open. And if a progressive candidate gets in there, then they could be setting themselves up, you know, to eventually become Speaker of the House. So the next couple of years will definitely be key in seeing how the Democratic Party shapes up in the legislature.
So the other thing we have to talk about is two special elections that are looming to fill seats vacated by state senators. Now Congresswoman-elect Sarah McBride and State Senator now Lieutenant Governor-elect Kyle Evans-Gay. First, can you explain to us how those seats will be filled? What's the special election process?
Yeah, absolutely. So the nitty-gritty, within 10 days of the vacancy, a writ of election needs to be sent to the Department of Elections, directing the department to conduct a special election for those vacated seats. And then that writ specifies the date on which the election will be held, which must be no earlier than 30 days and no more than 35 days from the day after the writ was issued.
And both those seats appear to be safe Democratic seats, correct?
Yeah. Sarah McBride's seat is in Senate District 1 in the Wilmington area, and Evans-Gay's seat is District 5, which is the Tallyville area. McBride's seat has been a longtime blue seat, but Evans-Gay's seat was previously held by a Republican before the 2020 election, so there's always the possibility of a flip, but they seem pretty safe.
Yeah, special elections can be weird. You see a lot of times really low turnout. If you're someone who can really have a good ground game, maybe you could pull an upset if you're a Republican. But as you said, likely safe Democratic seats. Anything else stand out to you, Sarah, about these election results and the impact we might see going into next year?
Yeah, I mean, I think we just have a lot of ongoing questions as far as legislation goes. I mean, I think that the makeup is still strong and there's a lot of, you know, Democratic pushed issues that are going to continue into the next session. But I mean, we also have a lot of Democratic backed things like the Hospital Cost Review Board that was passed, you know, offshore wind projects. Those are both facing lawsuits right now. We've got the Public Education Funding Commission that's going to be ongoing to restructure that funding system for Delaware's public education, climate stuff, budget deficits. I mean, there's so many questions to be held. I mean, we're keeping the same makeup in our General Assembly, which is that Democratic majority and the Republican minority. But it'll be interesting to see how those compromises play out going forward.
Thanks to Delaware Public Media political reporter Sarah Petrowich for joining us on The Green this week. Next up, we head to the University of Delaware to learn more about a study on the effectiveness of the shingles vaccine in preventing the disease, as well as dementia and stroke. You're listening to The Green on Delaware Public Media,